hovering like a jellyfish arm. Couldn't there be more, when this was all over, when they found those girls, however they were going to find them? Couldn't he take her to dinner? And couldn't she possibly have some wine and fix her focus on him? Walk around the table and lean down to tell him something, press her face against his, and breathe in his ear so he could smell the salt in her hair? His dick woke up a little, and he knocked his fist against his forehead and sat at the table. "Pull it together," he said aloud. "Let's not have an erection like a 12-year-old boy during his first slow dance." He opened the file on Ashley Cahill, and his eyes fell on scattered words. Blonde, blue, 44 inches, 45 pounds, hauling pool, mother bartender, father worked at a sporting goods store, missing, missing, missing. Then Vega came back. She nodded at him and sat back down at the table. "Everything's clean," she said.
"Yeah, dishwasher," he said. "You want anything else to drink?"
She shook her head and opened the file on Sidney McKenna. Cap looked back down at the Cahill police report. No one saw anything. She'd been at the pool with a group of kids, and one of their moms said one minute she was playing Marco Polo with the rest of them, and the next minute she wasn't. Cap picked up the 5x8 matte school portrait. Nell didn't have them done anymore, but Cap remembered them from grade school. Her image in varying sizes. Big, medium, a sheet of wallets. Rows and rows of Nells. The girl, Ashley, was cute, in the way all 6-year-olds were cute. Large eyes, unblemished skin. There was, in fact, nothing extraordinary about her. Except, Cap thought, to her parents. Vega closed the folder on Sidney McKenna and placed her hands on top of it. She looked intently at Cap, and he saw something strange about her eyes. They were clear and wet, but not like she'd been crying. It was like she'd dunked only her face in a pool. "I have to tell you something," she said.
"Okay."
She took a quick breath in and looked at the folder under her hands. "My mother died when I was 20. She had lymphoma," she said. They both waited. "Then my friend Perry, the guy who was kind of my mentor in fugitive recovery, a skip stabbed him in the kidney and he died walking out to his car, on the lawn."
"I'm sorry," said Cap.
He was unsure about a lot of things. She continued, "Then I started working freelance. I got lucky right away with Ethan Moreno." She paused, then said, "The biggest mistake people make is that they think they're special. They're not." She nodded, more to herself than to Cap, and seemed not to know what to do with her hands. She tapped her fingertips together like there were castanets on them. Cap didn't like it. Didn't like her sad and somewhat confused.
"Could I hug her?" he thought. "Will she slam her forearm into my face if I hug her and kiss the crease between her eyebrows?"
He didn't have a chance. She put her hands flat on the folder again and said, "Is there a gun shop open this late?" Quiet again in Cap's car. Vega felt strange, unused to a stomach full of food. Especially pasta, all that wheat swelling up like a pile of wet shoelaces. For a few years now, Vega had a neutral attitude about eating, bordering on animosity, frustration at the breaking of her body's systems when she was hungry. Watching people eat in restaurants, she thought it seemed like such a waste. "Do you think you have this kind of time?" she wanted to say to them. Hours and hours sitting over bread and butter and Big Macs. Perry had Diet Cokes and grilled cheese sandwiches with bacon 3 times a day every day she knew him, so he wouldn't spend any seconds considering the options. So Vega did that, too. Bananas, power bars, milk, juice. Some vitamins, some fat, some protein. Every day.
"You're gonna like this," said Cap.
He parked on a dark street
and they got out, walked to a two-floor brick house, picture window on the ground floor with a paper sign, a certificate, Smokey's Gun Shop. Below that, in big black letters, Glock. Then a woman came through a door to the right of the window with a ring of keys. She was round and short, with a boy's haircut, the skin on her nose and cheeks red and speckled. When she saw Cap, her face opened up. The keyhole mouth grew into a smile.
"Mr. Kaplan, ain't seen you much anymore," she said.
"Hey, Jean," said Cap.
They hugged. Vega stood back.
"This is my colleague, Alice Vega. She'd like to look at some firearms. This is Jean Radner. This is her shop."
"Hiya, Alice."
Vega shook hands with her, watched her unlock a series of locks on the glass door.
"Come on in, then."
They followed her in as she flipped the light switches, fluorescence flickering on in succession. Handguns with orange tags in glass cases like jewelry. Shotguns and rifles on the wall racks.
"What you been doing, Cap? How's your daughter?"
said Jean, pressing a code into an alarm box.
"She's well. 16 years old.
"You gotta be kidding me,"
said Jean, genuine surprise in her voice, almost to the point of being offended.
"That makes us, what, 100 goddamn years old or what?"
"Something like that. How are your sons?"
They kept talking about kids and houses and births and deaths. Vega looked at the semi-auto rifles on the wall, arranged by popularity as far as she could tell. Bushmasters, S&Ws, Sporticles, a Colt at the end of the row.
"Jason and his wife had twins, I tell you that," said Jean. "Sweet kids, but ugly. Don't know how they got that way either. Jason and Melanie are attractive. It's some kind of mystery."
"Could I see your Colt?" said Vega. Jean and Cap turned to her, both seeming surprised to hear her speak.
"You got it, hon," said Jean, going behind the counter. "You know I can't sell it to you, right? Have to wait for regular store hours."
"That's fine," said Vega. "I just want to try it out." Jean found a key on her ring and unlocked the case, lifted the rifle and handed it to Vega over the counter, continuing her conversation with Cap.
"Names are Boyd and Blaine. I said, isn't Blaine a girl's name? Didn't go over so well."
One hand on the grip and the other on the underside of the barrel, Vega held the rifle up, pressed her cheek against the stock. She could smell the alloy in the back of her throat, the tinny burn of it. The stock pushed against her shoulder. Something wasn't right. A Goldilocks feeling. "How long is it?" Vega said to Jean. Jean thought.
32, I think, with the stock retracted. Something wrong?"
"Seems long to me." Jean pulled out a lip balm stick and unscrewed the top, rubbed it across her lips, the color of rare meat.
"Well, what are you comparing it to, hon?"
Vega glanced at Cap and could see him putting something together. She knew the look now. His eyes got a little dreamy, and his head bobbed slightly from side to side, like he was weighing two things, like they were hanging on his ears.
"An M4, said Cap.
Then he looked at Vega.
"Right?"
She relaxed the grip, held it to her side. Cap was grinning like he had won a poker hand. "Right," she said.
"Oh, you're military," said Jean. "My nephew's in the Marines."
"I only went through basic," said Vega. At the mention of the word, she felt the heat, dirt from the ground in her mouth, triceps and deltoids humming, mashed like lemon pulp. And the hunger that started in her bones instead of her stomach, for any kind of calories, meatloaf between bread dipped in whole milk to get it down quicker, and as much coffee as she could swallow, throat already burned from breakfast.
"Army," said Cap, pointing at her.
"Right."
He smiled, pleased with himself. Almost made Vega smile, too. "Mind if I strip her?" said Vega. Jean shrugged one shoulder.
"Help yourself. It's brand new, though. You're not going to find any deposits."
"Sure. I just want to field strip it," Vega said. Jean's eyebrows arched up, and she smiled peacefully, knowingly, reminding Vega of yoga teachers, the way at the end they would say the light in me bows to the light in you or some kind of bullshit.
It relaxes you, right? Me too, Jean said. I'll get you an Allen wrench.
That's okay, said Vega, pulling back the charging handle. She took one of the pins from her hair.
Ha! Shouted Jean. She's prepared. You got a good one here, Cap.
Vega slid the front pivot pin to the side. The snap of the receivers coming apart had a soporific effect on her. Finally, she could rest a second. At the inn, Vega went through the motions of someone getting ready for bed. Took a shower, brushed her teeth, rubbed some of the complimentary gardenia-smelling lotion into her hands and on her legs. She lay down on the bed, closed her eyes, and did not sleep, ping-ponging questions back and forth in her head. Soon it was 5 or 6, blue light out the window as the sun rose somewhere close. Vega got off the bed and onto the floor on all fours, then into down dog, where she didn't linger, walking her feet up to her hands until they met. She held her breath, tensed her abs, and brought her legs up above, then stretched them out, widened the fingers, breathed. Then her mother in the hospital, the last time. Vega leaned down to kiss her forehead, and her mother grabbed her head suddenly and tried to pull her down, but she was not strong at that point. Vega was startled and a little terrified because she'd thought her mother was asleep. Her mother pushed her lips out like Vega was a drink she was trying to reach, and kissed the ridge between Vega's nose and cheek. Then she went back to dying. Vega came down from the handstand and sat on the floor with her knees bent and her head between them. She had been at her father's house when she heard the news. She'd always thought she would just know that there was a cosmic alarm clock built in her chest linking her to her mother. But no. Her mother had died, and Vega had no idea. And the Brandt girls were not even blood. These things weren't real. These connections between family members, husband to wife, parent to child. This psychic trash of people saying, I knew when so-and-so died, because I felt it in my soul, or my heart, or my pockets. You didn't, thought Vega. You had no idea. Those girls could have been in the ground 2 hours after they disappeared. And all of us have been running like hell in our mouse maze since then, tapping our bells and flags, desperate for pellets. Chapter 11 The next morning they arrived at Charlie Bright's mother's house early. A garbage truck rambled down the street. Cap pressed the doorbell, a grimy little button set in a rusty diamond.
"Do you want to talk about goals?" he said.
Vega's right shoulder jerked, the suggestion of a shrug. "No change," she said.
"Right?" "You're asking me?"
said Cap. "Yes," said Vega. Cap almost believed her. Then a dog started barking. Low bark, big dog, he thought. He could hear it sniffing at the door. He pulled the screen door open and knocked, and the dog continued to alternately bark and sniff. He turned back to Vega.
Your guy sure she's here?
Yes. Cap kept knocking, driving a stick in an anthill and shaking it around. Up and out, everyone. Then footsteps, and a voice shouted either at Cap or the dog or both,
That's enough! That's enough!
The door opened, and there was a slice of a woman, fat, loose gray curls on top of her head like Easter basket grass, and the dog, medium-sized, pushed his black olive nose on either side of the woman's legs.
Yeah?
She said.
Mrs. Lanowitz, said Cap.
Who's asking?
Great start, lady, thought Cap.
My name is Max Kaplan. This is Alice Vega. We're private investigators working with the Denville police.
Mrs. Lanowitz remained unmoved. She eyed them both.
I'm all paid up on tickets, she said.
Ma'am, we're hoping you might help us locate your son, Charles Bright.
A little flare in the dull eyes at the name.
He ain't here,
she said quickly.
Do you have any idea where he might be?
He lives up Camden. I don't know. I ain't talked to him in 6 months.
It was like she had rehearsed a few different things, but forgot she was supposed to pick only one story.
It's very important we find him, said Cap. It's about the Brandt girls.
Mrs. Lanowitz puckered up her mouth.
He ain't got nothing to do with anything like that, she said.
I'm sure he doesn't, said Cap.
We're looking for someone he used to work with at the Giant, hoping he can give us a lead.
Mrs. Lanowitz stepped back, a little disarmed.
Like I said, she said, quieter now, secretly sheepish. He ain't here.
Do you have a phone number where we might reach him? Said Cap.
From the side, Cap saw Vega step back, off the walkway, toward the street.
Now where are you going, girl?
Nah, he uses those disposable cell phones because he can't afford a plan. A monthly plan?
Address?
She placed her hand, thick and arthritic, on the doorframe.
He's living with my niece, I think. It's, 2040 Filberton Camden.
Cap watched her eyes wander to where Vega was. He didn't turn around.
2040 Filbert in Camden, he repeated. That a house or an apartment?
It's a house, she said, still watching Vega.
Your niece have a phone number?
Yeah, I have it, I think some, she said.
And then she stopped, mid-thought and mid-word, and she made her mouth into a little O and her eyes shot open wide.
What?
She said, pointing past Cap. Vega charged by him and shoved the door open, Mrs. Lanowitz falling backward but managing to steady herself against a table an eighth her size. The dog looked like a large hamster, a shaved square patch on its side, and continued to bark.
What the hell are you doing? You can't do this!
Mrs. Lanowitz shouted, bringing her claw hands to her head.
He's upstairs, Vega said to Cap, heading for the stairs.
Vega, wait, goddammit, Cap said to her.
Vega stopped at the bottom and shot him a glare.
This ain't right! This ain't right! Said Mrs. Lanowitz, waving her arms. You people think you can do whatever you want!
Cap looked around, faded floral-patterned couches facing each other, green carpet flipping up at the corners, narrow staircase to the right. Mrs. Lanowitz struggled to walk, her legs bowed, back bent at the base. She made her way toward Vega, shouting various threats.
You can't come into my property! I have a lawyer! This is a home invasion situation!
Mrs. Lanowitz, Cap said loudly. Shut up for a second.
She shut up and blinked, and sort of a whirring sound came from her throat, reminded Cap of an egg beater.
We're not going to hurt you or your son. We're not going to arrest either of you, but if we leave and find out you are holding back information or harboring your son here, then there will be a good deal of trouble landing in your lap.
Then she started to cry and let out a plaintive moan. Sometimes it really didn't take too much.
He's sick. He hurt his back. Please don't hurt him, she said to Cap.
Vega looked at Cap once more and then took the stairs, two at a time. Cap turned to follow, and Mrs. Lanowitz grabbed his sleeve.
He hurt his back working construction 2 years ago,
she whispered, spitting on him a little bit.
I understand that, said Cap, unlatching her.
He followed, and Mrs. Lanowitz started to climb slowly behind him. The dog ran in a little circle at the bottom, barking and wiggling. On the second floor, Vega glanced at the closed doors and approached the one with eagles and flyers stickers lining the border.
Can you wait a minute? Said Cap in a hushed voice.
He's right in there, she said, finger touching the door.
How do you know?
Cigarette butts all on the right side of the lawn, tamp marks on the sill, this sill. Mrs. Lanowitz kept coming, bellowing.
He's sleeping right now! He needs his sleep!
Cap whispered, You don't have to break every fucking door down, Vega.
This seemed to surprise her. Not every door, Kaplan, she said, almost sweetly. Just this one. She pushed open the door, slammed it against the back wall. The room was dark and humid, dirty curtains drawn over the single window. Posters of wrestlers, male and female, covered the walls. Cap doubted the decor had changed since Charlie Bright had been in junior high. There was a figure in a twin bed stirring under a blanket, without urgency.
"Charlie!" yelled Mrs. Lanowitz, almost at the top of the stairs. "They're police, Charlie!"
This got his attention. Charlie Bright sat up on his elbows, long hair and a raggedy beard and small eyes lolling around. Cap held his hand out to Vega. "Stand back for 1 second," he said to her in his head. To his relief, she did.
"Charles Bright," said Cap.
"Yeah?" "We need to ask you some questions about a former co-worker of yours, Evan Marsh."
Bright coughed and spit into a mug on the floor next to his bed.
"Don't know him," he said.
Cap sighed.
"Charlie, they want to ask you questions," yelled Charlie's mother from the hallway.
"I worked at the Giants 6 months ago," said Bright. "I'm out on disability."
"What's the injury?" said Cap.
"Back. Got a pinched nerve between L4 and L5.
"I would imagine you're medicated for that," said Cap. Bright sucked on his two front teeth.
"Got legal prescriptions from doctors."
"He's got a pinched nerve," said Mrs. Lanowitz,
breathing heavy in the doorway.
"Between L5 and L6.
"I told them," yelled Bright. "They don't want to listen."
"So just to clarify," said Cap, "you were employed by the Giant during roughly the same time frame as Evan Marsh, but you never met him or associated with him in either a personal or professional context?"
Said Bright. "Yeah, that's right."
Then he yawned. "You dumb motherfucker," Cap thought. He looked at Vega and said,
"I'll get Mama."
Vega's eyes lit up, Roman candle style, and then she charged the bed. Bright was so surprised he pulled the blanket up to his face, trying to hide. Vega gripped the sheet beneath him and yanked. Bright shouted and rolled out of the bed, landing hard on the floor.
"No! My boy!"
screamed Mrs. Lanowitz, lurching forward. Cap held his arm in front of her, not forcefully. Meanwhile, Bright moaned, and Vega stood above him and shoved her boot into his neck. Bright coughed and grabbed her ankle. He tried to build some rocking momentum with his legs, lifting them up and down, but he was overweight and doped and didn't have the sharpest reflexes, it turned out.
"What are you? Cops!"
cried Mrs. Lanowitz. "Evan Marsh," said Vega, crouching down. "We know you knew him."
"I don't know where he is," said Bright.
"He's nowhere," said Vega. "He was shot in the fucking face." Bright stopped squirming.
"Marsh is dead?" he said.
"You ain't cops,"
announced Mrs. Lanowitz, departing from the doorway.
"I'm calling the cops."
"That's right, Charlie," said Cap. "He knew something about the Brandt girls, and someone didn't want him to talk. So if you know something about the Brandt girls, someone might not want you to talk either. You following this?"
Bright's face was red, veins squiggling down his temples.
"He came to me."
"Who did?" said Cap.
"Marsh."
Cap nodded at Vega, and she removed her foot from Bright's neck. Bright sat up and coughed, rubbed his Adam's apple.
"He offered me money. $50K to move 2 girls.
He stopped talking and looked up at them, embarrassed.
"I didn't do it,"
he said, scissoring his arms in front of him like an umpire. Safe.
"I didn't take it. I didn't want to get involved in all that. Come on."
"He flat out asked you?" said Cap.
"We were smoking after work one day, and he said it all off the cuff, that he's got a way for me to make $50K, and all I gotta do is drive the car."
"And you weren't interested in that at all?"
"No, man. You can clean this place out. You're not gonna find $50K.
"Where did Marsh get that kind of money?"
"I don't know," said Bright.
I swear I don't know who is laying it out.
Do you have any idea who might be interested in a deal like that?
Bright struggled to sit up, hunched over his knees.
Shit, man. This is fucking D-ville, he said,
laughing. Sad, in a way.
Take your fucking pick.
Trainer had a list. They put Bright in a small room with a cop named Harrison, and out had come a list. Now Vega was in Trainer's office with Cap, Harrison, and the Fed. She stood in the corner while the men talked.
Revs Cleary, John McKee, Harlan DeMarco, Jason Boromir, goes by Bent. You remember these guys?
Trainer said to Cap.
Little bit, said Cap.
They've all been in and out 2-3 times for possession, but nothing sticks. If they're dealing, they clean out before we get to it.
We're just going on Mr. Bright's opinion at this point, said the Fed.
That's correct, said Trainer, looking up from his notes. You're saying this might not be the best use of our time?
The Fed didn't move.
I'm saying that, yes.
It was maybe the most civilized exchange Vega had ever heard. It was like they were discussing what color to paint the living room. Then she said, It's Bright's opinion, but these are Evan Marsh's known associates, right? The men turned to her.
Right, said Trainer. And they're dealers or fences or whatever?
Right. Users, at the least.
So you'd agree that's a demographic likely to traffic in large sums of money illegally obtained?
Ma'am, said the Fed, I have no doubt these gentlemen are likely candidates. What we're looking at is men and the time it will take to chase all of them down. We're looking at the most likely, and how do we discern that in the quickest amount of time possible?
She stretched her fingers at her sides, thought, Well, we stop sitting around fucking chit-chatting about it for one motherfucking thing. Then she glanced at Cap. He was staring at her intently, and then he tilted his chin downward, nodding. She was confused by the gesture at first, couldn't identify his expression. It was conviction, that thing underneath. I am calm because I believe in you. I am right here. So 10 minutes, okay? She said, her mouth dry. You have something on them, right? Pictures, priors?
Yeah,
said Trainer. Let me and Kaplan look at them for 10 minutes. That's it. Match up the names to Marianne Marsh's list. See if anything jumps? She said it like a question out of respect. I am not pissing on your investigation, Chief. I will not make trouble, Special Agent. I will stay out of your way and keep being right, and you all can come around any time you want. In the blue room, Rawls laid out photos and files. The faces were all familiar to Cap. He wasn't sure if that was because he knew them personally, or if they just looked like 100 other drug dealers he'd shoved into the back of his car when he was a cop. Same dim stares, same dumbass tribal tattoos, same line of bullshit, too. I wasn't there. Been out of town since Tuesday. Where's your warrant, asshole? And then the ones who wanted to get to him. Threats spit through their hillbilly teeth. You got kids, officer. I'll find 'em. Sure hope you have a daughter.
So, said Junior, impatient, what's the course here, Cap?
Cap looked at the three of them, Hollows, Rawls, and Vega, and realized they were all waiting for him, and also that it might be a nice thing to stop and take a little dip in the moment, but there was no time.
We're taking 10 minutes, seeing if anything jumps for anyone. We're looking for a type desperate enough to get past dealing or fencing or possession into kidnapping.
Okay,
said Junior, picking up a mugshot. Shaggy, red-eyed stoner.
Revs Cleary, last time in was last year for speeding. We found marijuana in the car, but just under 30 grams. He was in county for a month and released.
Cap flipped through the file and handed it to Vega.
Jason Bent Boromir, busted for possession of oxy, but the cognitively impaired prosecution couldn't manage to prove that he had intent to sell. Apparently, he had a couple thousand pills and 10 boxes of commercial food service sandwich bags for his own personal use. Did just 1 year at Allenwood.
Cap and Vega stared down at the photo. Shaved head, teardrop tattoos. Cap handed her the paperwork.
Harlan DeMarco, said Junior. I know this guy, said Cap, remembering.
He held the picture in his hand. DeMarco was older than the rest, with white hair and tinted glasses. Looked like he should have been at the other end of a craps table.
I thought Foreman got him, said Cap. Foreman did get him, said Junior, on back taxes. DeMarco lived in a new development, kept his stash in the damn wine cellar. The warrant said we could search the immediate premises, and his lawyer, some ringer from New York, got the jury to agree that the wine cellar didn't count as immediate. We could have had him on a felony. Instead, we get back taxes.
Fuck me, said Cap.
Classic Denville clusterfuck, said Junior.
Cap passed the file to Vega, said,
I can't see him getting into kidnapping kids.
Why the hell not? Said Junior. He's got his hands in everything else from here to Harrisburg. Why not kidnapping?
Junior, said Cap.
Likelihood? Odds?
Junior pawed at the ground with his foot.
All right, he said. Then I say Bent could do it. He smokes a little meth himself. He's pretty shithouse crazy. Revs, no. If we're placing odds, no.
Why not? Said Cap.
He's a stoner. He has family money. And the only reason he deals is because he got kicked out of private school. I don't like him for this.
John McKee, said Vega, sliding a folder toward Cap. She held on to the picture.
Sure, McKee could do it, said Junior. Did a little time for assault and possession. And sexual assault, I think.
But not of a minor, Cap said, reading.
So what? We're just looking for kidnapping, not abuse, right?
Right.
Kaplan, said Vega. They all turned to her. She stared at John McKee's photo, her eyes covering the page quickly, manically.
Yeah, said Cap.
Look familiar? She said, flipping the photo around. He saw and thought, God damn yes it did. It really, truly did. It made Alyssa Mosier smile, the mugshot.
Yeah, I see it, sure, she said. And he's having a good day, but still, you shouldn't, you know, get your hopes up.
We understand, said Cap. We just want to see if this photo sparks anything at all in your uncle's memory. We're comfortable with long shots, Miss Mosier.
Alyssa shook out her shoulders and said, Okay, then let me go make sure he's awake. She left them. Went down a hall, into another hall. Then Vega heard her speaking, softly. She looked at a glass case full of plates and thin-stemmed glasses.
You realize, Cap started.
Vega held up her hand to him, said, I realize.
You're not even going to let me finish?
I'm not, said Vega. I realize.
Well, okay, said Cap. Miss Vega realizes.
She started to smile, and Alyssa Mosier returned.
You can come in, she said.
They followed her down the hall, into a room where an old man lay, propped up by pillows, his head thin and spotted.
Uncle Roy, these are the folks I told you about. They're trying to find those girls, said Alyssa,
her voice amplified. Roy Eldridge stretched his neck, his head reaching toward them.
Hello,
he said with some effort.
Hi, Mr. Eldridge, said Cap. We'd like to show you some pictures, and if anyone looks familiar to you from last Saturday at Ridgewood Mall, or if you remember anything at all from that day, we're hoping you could let us know. Does that sound all right?
Eldridge wet his lips with his tongue, and Alyssa held a glass of water underneath him. His mouth found the straw, and he drank.
Sure. He said, Shame. Shame about those girls.
Yes, sir, said Cap. Now first, could you tell me, are these the girls you saw when you were leaving the mall last Saturday?
Cap brought the school photos of Kylie and Bailey to Eldridge.
Wait,
said Alyssa.
Wait, wait, wait,
she muttered. She went to the small table next to the bed, opened a drawer and pulled out a glasses case and a pair of large-rimmed black bifocals. Here, she said, placing them on Eldridge's head. They made him look like he was wearing a costume, a librarian for Halloween.
Were those the girls you saw in the car? Said Cap.
Eldridge inspected the picture, like he was looking at a germ under a microscope.
I'll tell you, sir, I think so. But you understand, my eyes aren't what they used to be.
That's fine, said Cap, reassuring. That's not a problem. Now I'm going to show you another picture, and if you could, please tell us if this person looks familiar to you.
Cap pulled the mugshot of John McKee from his folder and held it up to Eldridge.
Yeah, said Eldridge, happy. Now that looks like Harry. Doesn't it look like Harry?
Sure does, Uncle Roy, said Alyssa.
Except Harry's never in a bad mood, said Eldridge. He's a glass half full.
Mr. Eldridge, said Cap, gentle, quiet. Did you see this man with those girls in the car when you left the mall last Saturday?
Well, sure I did, said Eldridge. He was driving. I tried to get his attention, but Harry's a good driver. He's looking straight ahead.
Vega glanced at Alyssa, who looked back at her face a mixed grill of sad and worried. Then Eldridge placed a giant hand on the expanse of his forehead, his fingers crooked at the knuckles.
Oh, hell, Lissy,
he said.
Harry's dead, isn't he?
Yeah, Uncle Roy,
said Alyssa, crying a little bit.
Over in Vietnam.
This fellow, he only wears his hair the same way,
Eldridge said to Cap. I think so, Mr. Eldridge.
Eldridge's lips curled in, and milky tears rolled down his face.
'Cause Harry's dead. Long dead.
Yes, sir, said Cap,
so soft and sweet it made Vega want to lie down and go to sleep.
Do you remember anything else about this man who looked like Harry? Or the little girls, or the car?
Eldridge pinched his nose with his thumbs.
I don't think so, he said. Car was tannish, I think. Had a bumper sticker, said Eldridge. Giants. New York Giants.
Eldridge laughed.
Harry never would have had that, would he, Lissy? He was a true Blue Eagles fan.
It made Cap smile, the way Eldridge said Eagles, like Eagles.
You bet, Uncle Roy,
Alyssa said, laughing too.
That's incredibly helpful, sir, said Cap. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
Thank you,
Vega said, louder than she had planned, so even Cap turned and appeared surprised.
We're glad to help, said Alyssa. Isn't it so, Uncle Roy? If we could help find those missing girls?
Eldridge did not seem glad to help. He lowered his brow, looked wistful. Could have been trying to remember what he had for breakfast or how he was a paperboy in the Depression. Could be anything, Vega thought.
Oh, hell, Lissy. Looks like I peed, he said, shifting around.
It's okay, Uncle Roy. I'll get the stuff, said Alyssa.
She turned to Cap and Vega.
You folks need anything else?
No, thank you. This has been very valuable to us. Thank you both, said Cap.
He continued to talk to her as they left the room. Vega looked back once more at Eldridge, gazing up like he was trying to make out words on the ceiling. For a second, Vega looked up there, too, just in case. Cap hung up with Trainer, stared at some boys in long T-shirts, hair falling in their eyes. They sat at a table in the food court, drinking juice from giant cups, straws squeaking in the plastic lids. He saw Vega behind the counter at the Peking Express, showing photos to a large woman wearing a polo shirt, the manager. The woman also had papers for Vega and flapped her hands while she talked like she was swatting flies. Vega stared at the hands, and it made Cap smile because she looked like just another cop, listening to all the details a witness wanted to tell you along with their opinions and psychological diagnoses.
Mr. Kaplan?
Cap turned around, saw a lovely, tired woman with a toddler asleep in a stroller in front of her. The last time he had seen her, a couple of days ago, she had been just as lovely, only angrier.
Hey. Hi, Mrs. Svetich, he said. Who's this?
That's Cammy, she said. He's my youngest. This is when he's the cutest.
Cap laughed and started to say the thing about little kids, little problems, but she cut him off.
I'm glad I ran into you, she said.
She was not shaking, but it looked like she was about to start.
I wanted to tell you I'm sorry for how I behaved the other day, in your office. I shouldn't have taken out my anger about my shitty marriage on you.
She said it quickly, as if she'd said it before. Cap pictured her rehearsing in the mirror. Mr. Kaplan, I'm glad I ran into you.
Please, said Cap. You have nothing to apologize about.
I do, she said firmly. I tell my kids all the time. Just because you're in a bad mood doesn't give you the right to take it out on the world.
What do they say to that?
They don't listen to a thing I say, she said. But, you know, I figure I keep telling them this shit, and then one day they'll be 25 and they'll remember it.
And where will you be then? Said Cap,
not even thinking about what he was asking or why he was asking it. But if he thought about it, he would know it was her, Mrs. Svetich, at exactly this point, with no filters, clogs removed from the drains, speaking plainly. And it made him want to do the same.
When they're 25? She said,
charmed by the idea.
On a beach somewhere, I don't know.
Then she laughed, embarrassed, and Cap laughed and thought how this would be a part of her divorce story years from now, how she ran into the detective a few days after he had caught her ex, and he made her laugh.
There you go, said Cap. I'll expect a postcard.
She laughed in a burst, and then tears filled her eyes.
Mrs. Svetich, Cap began.
She leaned forward and kissed him on the cheek and hugged him then, clung to him, pushed her face into his neck. Cap could feel her breasts against his chest, the moisture from her eyes and nose, her lips. Very slowly he put his arms around her and closed his eyes, did the hair-smelling thing. Some kind of berries, but that could have been coming from Jamba Juice. Her arms were thin but strong like belts, stretching around his neck and pulling him close. So much of it was unfamiliar, he had a hard time parsing it out. The smell, the skin, the closeness, the need. But all of it was good, glorious, exquisite. Finally, she stepped away. Cap let her go instantly. Did not want her to think he might have enjoyed what was probably a peak moment of loneliness for her. She patted her damp cheeks and looked at him, not shy in the least. She said,
"Everything happens at the wrong time, doesn't it?"
Cap felt spun and skinned by that one.
"Yes," he said, "it does."
She turned around and looked at her kid.
He'll be awake any minute. It was nice to see you, Mr. Kaplan. I hope I see you again. Her eyes were huge and dark, and there was nothing hidden away behind them. Cap was so caught off guard by her honesty, all he could say was,
"Yes."
Then she left, wheeled the stroller around, shopping bags dangling from the handles. Cap watched her go, the shape of her moving under a flimsy drape of a dress that looked insubstantial for the beginning of spring. He watched her get smaller and smaller, turn a corner at the Old Navy, and then disappear. He looked at his hands, front and back, could still feel the warmth from Mrs. Fetich's body, and leaned against the table so he could breathe, stoned from the intimacy. Vega held the mugshot of John McKee in her hands and waited for the manager to come back with his original job application, which was the only information on him that was available. She examined the people standing around, sitting, eating, shopping bags at their feet. She studied their shoes and their earrings and the way they held their spoons, noticed the irregularities of their faces, unevenly spaced eyes, discolored skin, moles, beards. She realized Cap had been gone for some time, and turned to find him, and there he was, across the food court, hugging a woman. Hugging didn't seem an accurate word to describe how they were touching each other. The woman was clinging to Cap like she was drowning, and he was the life raft, which made Vega the one on some distant shore with broke-ass binoculars. The woman left Cap and wandered off, slowly pushing a stroller. Cap watched her and didn't move. He was a little too far away for Vega to see his face, but she took in his posture. Most of it was as she had observed before. Minor slump in the shoulders, feet rooted slightly farther apart than the hips, neck curved and head tilted, quizzical. But one difference now. His hands were out in front of him a few inches, like he was waiting for the woman to come right back. Vega's phone buzzed with a text from the bastard. Still looking for Kay Brandt, the person, but found someone else looking for him, too. Seems like you guys have a lot in common. Email coming with details. Vega put the phone in her pocket and looked back at Cap. Still facing the direction of the woman, but on his phone, texting the way he did with an index finger tapping out one letter at a time. Then he turned around, eyes scanning the crowd for her. She didn't wave or come forward, just waited for him to find her. And when he did, he waved broadly. Relieved or resigned, she couldn't tell. Chapter 12 Cap tapped the number at the top of his recents and set the phone in the cup holder. There was a gulp in the air, and then the ring, then a pickup.
Kendrick! Officer Kendrick, this is Max Kaplan. Sorry I missed you.
That's fine, said Kendrick on the phone, his voice wavering loud and quiet.
You want to know about John McKee?
Yes. You met with him the last time.
Cap paused. Vega held up one finger and mouthed, Year.
A year ago, is that correct? Said Cap.
Yeah, that's right. He completed his parole.
You have any idea where he is now?
Kendrick laughed.
We didn't talk too much socially, so no, I don't know where he is.
Can I ask why you're looking?
We'd like to question him in an ongoing investigation, the Brandt girls.
Can you tell us anything that might be helpful in that regard?
In finding him? The guy lived with some friends, but not for long. Had a job at the mall, right?
Yeah, we just came from there.
He had a girlfriend, too. She'd been down in Riverside and Philly. Charming girl.
Cap smiled and looked over at Vega, who did not smile.
He stayed with her for a long time. Her family was up in Wilkes-Barre. I'd try her. Even if he's not with her, she might know.
Great. Can you get us her name?
Yeah, give me a few minutes to go through the notes. I'll send you a text.
Cap said thanks, and Kendrick said he was happy to help and then hung up. Cap tapped the wheel with his thumbs.
So we get the name, maybe we send it to your guy? Vega?
He looked over. Her eyes were closed,
her head leaning into the sling of the seatbelt. Asleep. Her hands were in her lap, fingers twitching. Cap smiled, glad she was getting rest. Also realized he worried about her getting rest. Realized he was worried about her at all. Some loose strands of her hair fell across her cheek, into her eyes, and Cap thought, what was the harm in it, really? Just to sweep it off her face and bring it behind her ear? I'll barely touch her, he thought. Vega was not asleep, just shut down for a while. She pictured John McKee, and she pictured Evan Marsh, headshots and camera flashes behind her eyes. They were dots on a map with roads sprouting out from each like veins, and only one road was the one. Only one lit up from underneath with runway lights, but she couldn't see where it led. Cap's phone dinged, and Vega opened her eyes and sat up. Cap grabbed at his phone but somehow knocked it onto the floor near Vega's feet. Fuck, he said, disoriented, like he'd been asleep. Vega picked it up and read from Kendrick's text aloud. The girl's name is Dina Macht. In Riverside for 18 months for assault and possession of drugs and stolen property. Corresponded with John McKee while on the inside and then reunited when they were both out. Kendrick said before they were arrested, their hobbies included smoking meth, snorting Vicodin, picking pockets, and stealing from family. He would not be surprised if they were involved in one or more of those activities currently. Vega scrolled, read more. That's how Dina Macht got busted in the first place. Her parents called it in.
Her parents? Said Cap.
Vega typed in a message to the bastard on her phone, and then Cap's phone buzzed again, and she read the text on the screen.
Who's that? He asked.
Trainer. He wants us to come in.
Why?
They have Kevin Brandt. Then she had to put both phones in her lap because of the sweat budding on her hands. Also on the bottom of her feet, muddying the insides of her shoes, and a single drop sliding down her arm. She opened the window and stuck her head out. It was getting dark, and there was a little rain in the air. Cap was asking her questions, but she didn't answer. She breathed and tried to count 5 on the inhale and 5 on the exhale. Push, pull, said a yoga teacher in her head. In-breath to the out-breath. Fuck you, said Vega to the yoga teacher. I want the shallow breath, and I want the sweat, and I want the headache. It means I'm close. Cap huddled in a hallway with Trainer, Junior, and the Fed. Vega stood with her back flush against the wall, not leaning. She had her jacket draped over her forearm, and her skin was wet and white. Cap tried to get her eye, but she wouldn't look at him.
Brant's in A, said Junior. Who's with him? Asked Cap. No one right now, said Junior. Says he has a lawyer coming.
Trainer added, he claims he doesn't know where the girls are. Hasn't seen them in 8 years. Same story Jamie told us.
Where'd you find him?
Town in southern Ohio, said the Fed. Living under the name Miss Vega's contact provided. We had people search his home where a number of illegal recreational substances were recovered.
But not 2 girls, said Cap.
No, his alibi checks out as well.
Which is what?
The Fed paused, looked at him sideways.
That he was in southern Ohio at the time of the abduction? He's got 6 people who can vouch for him.
Yeah, but he lived here once, said Cap. He could still have connections here.
He didn't know Evan Marsh, said Trainer.
Says he didn't.
Who's talking to him?
Harrison could, said Trainer.
Let Vega do it, said Cap.
She looked up, pushed gently off the wall. Junior stiffened up, ready to talk. Trainer cut him off.
She's not a police officer, said Trainer,
but he wasn't digging in.
Brant's not a suspect, said Cap. They're perfect for each other. He also owes 8 years of child support. He doesn't have a lot of cards here.
Trainer and the Fed glanced at each other. Cap felt them tipping. Come on, he wanted to say,
She's having an anxiety attack. This will be just the thing to snap her back. Some girls need a spa treatment to unwind. This one likes an interrogation.
Vega looked at him, brows heavy over her eyes, tired and a little grateful. It was a little room, had the coppery smell of office machinery. Kevin Brandt sat at a square table, texting on his phone when Vega came in.
"Who are you?" he said.
"Vega."
"Yeah, who are you? Cop? Lawyer? FBI?"
His voice was nasal, congested, and he had a flat face like an inbred dog.
"No," said Vega.
She sat opposite him, and he sniffed loudly.
"Then why are you here? You know my ex-wife? Huh?"
Vega folded her arms. Brandt dropped his phone on the table and pressed a fingertip hard on top of it.
"You can't keep me here without charging me. You know that, right?"
Vega was quiet.
"I got a lawyer," Brandt said. "He's coming."
Vega leaned forward and laced her fingers together on the table like an altar boy. "Where are the girls?" she said.
"How should I fucking know?" said Brandt.
"When's the last time you saw them?"
8 years ago, he said,
not having to think about it. "You know a guy named Evan Marsh?"
"Nope."
"You sure?" she said. "Be sure."
"Hey, fuck you, bitch. Nothing wrong with my faculties. I heard you and I answered you. And unless you or a real actual cop is gonna charge me with something, I have somewhere to be."
Brandt crossed his arms and waited for the insults to sink in. Vega just leaned back in her chair. She stretched her arms up, kept the fingers laced, palms up, just like a yoga instructor would tell her. And then she yawned. Cap and Junior stood on the other side of the glass. Junior was moving around, nervous, not sold.
"So she's tired? That's the plan?"
Cap watched Vega yawn, having never seen it happen before. There was no way she was tired. She didn't get tired. Or she was just young enough to fight it off.
"Just wait," he said to Junior.
But to Vega in his head, he said, "You got a plan, right, girl?" She let her hands drop to her sides, rolled her head from side to side, hearing little cracks from the cartilage in her neck. "So you're sure you don't know where the girls are?" she said again, almost friendly, almost cute. Brandt stared at her, shoving his confusion into a corner to make room for the agitation.
"Yeah, that's what I've been fucking saying for fucking 2 hours since I got picked up. Now charge me or I leave through that door right there, right now," he said, pointing to the door in question.
Vega turned around to look at the door like she'd forgotten where it was. "Right," she said. She exhaled in a whistle. "Okay, then. I guess you're free to go."
"I'm going in," said Junior,
at the end of whatever frail cord he'd been hanging by. "Wait," said Cap gently. "Just give her a minute." He watched her expression, totally foreign to him. This one a little flaky, flirty. Another brand new Vega in front of him, unwrapped from her box. New clothes, new face, new pose. Brandt didn't move.
"And you all are just gonna let me walk out of here, unmolested?"
"Well, sure. You're not under arrest, right?" said Vega.
"Right," said Brandt.
They watched each other for another minute, Brandt still confused and angry about it, Vega weirdly cheery. Finally, she took out her phone and started thumbing the screen. Brandt stood up slowly and grabbed his own phone from the table. "Sorry we wasted your time, Kevin," said Vega, smiling distractedly.
"Yeah, whatever." "Fuck off,"
Brandt said as an afterthought. He grunted an unintelligible thing and headed for the door, behind Vega. "Oh, hold on," she said, tapping her screen, not turning to look at him. Quick question. You know a guy named Ant-